Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our special guest is Andy Vitale, the Director of User Experience for Polaris Industries and also a person with multiple design credentials and interviews, and we're going to talk about growing design teams today. This episode is brought to you by UserList.io, a new tool for sending event-based email to your SaaS users. Overwhelmed with existing automation tools? Try this simple solution for converting free trials, user onboarding, and promoting specific features in your web application. To learn more, join the waiting list at UserList.io. Hi, Andy.
Hey, Jane, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks for making the time for us today. We're thrilled to have you as a guest.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm pumped for this.
Amazing. So we're going to talk about design teams, but before we get started, I'm just going to ask you one brief question about what you do and what have you been doing all your life in the design industry?
Sure. So currently I'm the Director of User Experience at Polaris Industries. It's a global power sports company behind brands like Indian Motorcycle, off-road vehicles, snowmobiles. We've got government vehicles and an electric vehicle called GEM, which on the other side of the world is also known as Goupil. I'm also the Director of Design Impact for AIGA Minnesota. So it's about thinking about how design can make a positive difference in the world, and different groups like sustainable design and design for good fall under my watch at the AIGA. And I've been in design for about 20 years now. I've got a degree in graphic design, spent some time doing print design, early days of web, ended up transitioning to design education as a department chair for a university, and then really started to get into UX by learning what was happening around me and understanding and diving into blogs and understanding these specializations. And then I had the opportunity to practice that as partner in a small agency. From there, it's been mobile product design, e-commerce, growing a team that was focused in healthcare at 3M, and now my current role at Polaris.
Fantastic. So at Polaris, I can't even imagine how large your team is and what exactly you do with them.
You know, it's funny because our team is actually quite small. Pretty much everywhere I've worked, the team or my immediate team has been pretty small, even in large organizations. So we've got a team of, I would say, let's say 10 as a round number of designers, half of them being located in Monterrey, Mexico, and the other half being on site. So our design team is really focused for our web-based products. We're broken into product teams around key components of our website. We're starting to branch out and do a lot of work on our dealer enterprise system, and we're building a team for that. At 3M, again, I was part of a design team that was about 20, and that team, for healthcare, the design team was about 20. And about half of that, a little more than half of that, were UX-based. And they focused on six business groups within 3M, six divisions, sorry, within 3M. And then eventually I started a team that was focused on our enterprise software. And that team, I was a team of one when I started, and that team grew to a team of five.
Great. So you have different angles on that problem. But 10 designers is it's a pretty big group to manage if you think about that, because they're creative people. Everyone has their needs. Everyone wants to grow.
It's true. And you know, when I came on board to Polaris and inherited a team of 10, you know, when you inherit a design team that you haven't built yourself, you're really not sure like what you're getting yourself into. So as you just meet and spend time with people and understand what motivates them and what their goals are and sit down and see how they interact with the business and stakeholders and how they're perceived within the organization, you really start to help shape a career path for them or a plan or how do you find areas of opportunity to help them grow as designers. But still at the same time, let them do their thing. Some of them have been here for quite some time, so they know the business better than I do. So I have to learn from them as well and get myself caught up to speed. But putting people first in a situation where they may have not had previous guidance or as many design critiques or one-on-ones as maybe they should have or maybe I would like to have with them. So it really is about understanding their individual successes and what their version of success is and identifying what motivates them. And at the same time, like, how do you just, through empathy, like, understand their situation and figure out a way to make it better for them? Because leading a team or managing a team, directing a team, it's all about people. And the people that we work with are important to make sure that we're building the right products.
Awesome. So for the situation when you come in and there is an existing team, what were your global takeaways from that situation, from your story, that our listeners could use when they end up in the same situation, when they're suddenly heading up a department that they didn't even belong to, and that might be a big challenge psychologically?
Right. And it was. The story at Polaris is between the point of time of when I accepted the position and when I started, there was a reorg within the organization. And when I started, it had literally happened like a week before. So things were still a little, we'll call them squishy. People weren't really sure of their new role or how the new organization structure would play out fully or at least confident in the way that structure was in place. So the last thing you want to do as a design leader is jump in and try to change things or cause more disruption to something that had already been disrupted. Of course, you want to jump in and fix things that you identify. But at this point, with this particular situation, it was about not reacting, but just kind of taking it all in and learning by just spending time and talking to people. So literally spent time with my team the first day. And this was, we didn't have the true global team. At this point, our team in Mexico was mostly considered content through our CMS. They were doing a lot of content entry and a lot of production design work. But they're all trained designers, which it took me a little while just to even know and understand that that was happening and see the full landscape. I started just focusing on my local team first. And through just interacting with my team here, I asked them, like, who should I talk to? Who do you interact with on a pretty regular basis? And just set up meetings and really wanted to understand where design was positioned. And what I did is I sent out a survey to all of the stakeholders that were identified by my team just to get a baseline of where design was maturity level wise. So the Danish Design Center, I think in 2001 or 2004, they created a design maturity ladder, and it kind of explains the different levels of maturity that design has within an organization. And it starts with basically like no design or people that are non-designers doing design work or small pockets of designers just, basically feasting on scraps whenever someone decides to throw them a bone and say, here's a design project, like I need you now. From there, it goes to like design as styling. And, you know, even though first impressions, 94% of them are based on visualization. You want to not play the, hey, let's make this look pretty. You really want to start to drive strategy. But level two of the design ladder is literally like design as styling. And I feel like at Polaris, we were kind of in between one and two. It was a mix. That's not to say that that was relatively low. When I was at 3M, I would say they played a little bit of each of the four ladders. So it was a little bit different. But, you know, the goal is to let design become part of the process and be strategic. And the only way to do that is to influence your stakeholders and show results. So it was about, like, let's sit down as a team and let's come up with, like, design principles that we can share out within the organization and think of ways that we can basically share our wins, but also educate people on who we are and what we do and what competencies we have and the value that we can add and show examples. Because my job really is to not only provide direction to my team, but it's to empower them to do their best work and then amplify that throughout the rest of the organization. So it was really just figuring out what they were working on and spending time to understand the projects. And then along the way, I learned that we've got this team in Mexico, and They've got a lot of design capabilities. So we planned a trip. I went to Mexico and I assessed the talent there and realized that we inherited a very talented group of people, fortunately for me. And we figured out how to integrate them into products and projects and, you know, leverage, excuse me, their expertise from, you know, anything that we could and figure out how to just kind of scale the work that our team was doing. So it really is literally like understand your people and understand the projects and figure out a way to get them embedded. And that's really like one of the keys to growing a team. You've got to have small wins. And with these small wins, they start to speak volumes for what you're doing, what your team is doing. And then people want to be part of what's successful. And then when they see design work, I literally just got out of a meeting sharing to the whole organization three like key programs that my team is working on to a lot of people that have never worked with my team. And you know, when they see how much progress we've made and what an impact we've made, because some of these things are immediately measurable, you know, afterwards they were like, hey, how do I get your team on my project? I've got this project coming up. And I'm like, hey, you know what? I need more people. My team is at full capacity. Like, we've got to figure out how to fund this team or add people to the team. And we did that at 3M too. It was, how do we show our value so that people understand and want it, but let them realize that we can't be spread too thin like peanut butter. It's really about working on projects where we add the most value. And, you know, the organization at some point has to both philosophically and financially invest in design. And they do that when they see results. And that's been the trick to growing teams. It's not really a trick. It's just like natural progression. And we're about to experience that at Polaris. I could feel it. And that's what I came here to do.
Fantastic. You mentioned those values that hold the design team together. And it's fantastic to even think and formalize them first. But do you document them somehow so that new people who come on board could reference something, maybe values, maybe achievements, something that represents your team, not only verbally and philosophically, but practically and in written form?
We do. So one of the things that we're trying to do is establish a career framework first and foremost. It's about letting designers know what their career at Polaris looks like and what those paths actually are for them. Because previously, there hadn't been a lot of thought into it because the design wasn't a fully like functional competency at the time. So right now I'm working with HR and we're really trying to figure out like what that career path looks like. And through, if you want to go management track or stay individual contributor, like how that goes. So I'm a director, which basically puts me as the highest ranking UX person at Polaris. So before that, the career path stopped at like design manager. So now I'm trying to build out, well, even for me, what is next? What's after director? Because it's not set up in the org chart that way. I'm sure other areas, they have a path so we can follow that. But, you know, even design, there are different competencies that make up a team. And for me, it's about identifying a way to have people grow and still keep their core competency. So it's interesting because every design team is structured differently. And to me, it's about the needs that the business has. So that in my mind, and I know at 3M also, at 3M we had six competencies that made up our design team. And at Polaris, we also have six competencies, but they're very different. At 3M, they were six specialized roles. And at Polaris, I think there are three roles that would cover all six competencies. So I've talked a lot about competencies, so I might as well explain what they are. So to me, the UX team I'm building at Polaris has a strategy component. We need to really focus on strategy and help understand, like, UX is really good at helping merge, you know, business needs and user needs so that we can build a product that's mutually beneficial. Beyond that, we've got to have, you know, user research here. It's really important for us to understand who our users are and identify new users and mitigate risk by understanding users through observation so that we can uncover behavioral insights and unarticulated needs. Beyond that, we've got an information architecture aspect so that we can organize information for a product in a way that matches the user's mental model. We then go into interaction design, so we focus on behaviors and functionality that help users achieve these outcomes. And then we, of course, have visual design. And our visual design is about designing and governing. It's about making sure we've got visual quality that are both, it's hierarchical, but aesthetically pleasing. And we really do focus on that. And then, of course, we are really big into validation. We like to validate solutions through user testing, have users actually perform the tasks, and provide feedback so that we can iterate as quickly as possible, starting with the lowest fidelity possible, going into like eventually like launching and measuring metrics. So you asked about our design principles and whether we share those with new people that come on board and become part of the team, and we do. We've printed out our design principles. They all have icons attached to them. We've communicated them with the business, and I can share them with you to show your users what we do at Polaris. So our first principle is customer first, and it's about not just satisfying users but loving them. Because when you're in love, it's all about surprising people and delighting them and making things magical for them, because things change and you want them to change over time, but you never want to lose that focus on who's using your product. Our second principle is about asking why. It's about talking to people. It's discovering unarticulated needs through curiosity and intent. Designers are just naturally curious, so it's great to ask questions to uncover why we're doing things. Then it's about being authentic. It's about earning trust both with our business partners, our stakeholders, and with our users. And it's about building and cherishing those relationships and always being transparent. Our fourth principle is about empathizing obsessively. And we do this through collaborating, co-creation, to deeply connect with our users and our stakeholders, to create consistent emotional experiences with them. And we drive prioritization by balancing the user needs and our and business intent. Of course, we appreciate that the business provides this opportunity for us to solve these problems. And then our fifth one is about communication, and it's communicate effectively. It's about speaking the same language, knowing your audience, and knowing how to speak to them to avoid causing confusion. Designers can't always use design speak around the business because sometimes they close themselves off to that. So we have to make sure that we're speaking one language. Then it's about being influential, right? Design is really a storytelling tool. So it's about educating and evangelizing design and leveraging design to tell stories that influence others. And for us at Polaris, our riders, they're passionate, and we want to fuel their passion. And internally too, you know, if you're building a design team, sometimes it's really good to talk to your stakeholders and try to understand their vision and help them visualize that, because that allows you to inject a little bit of influence and align with them and be on the same page, but also have a little control in shaping that vision. It's also about going all in for us. It's about taking risks and showing confidence, trusting your instincts so that you were hired to be an expert. Be that expert. I'm going to help you grow, but you need to, like, I'm not going to micromanage you. I'm going to trust you to do your job and be that expert, but you're going to be accountable. But stand your ground and become comfortable in uncomfortable situations. Designers are good at making other people feel uncomfortable because they're always pushed, you know. We're always pushing the boundaries, but sometimes when the tides are turned, we're not great in uncomfortable situations. So start to become comfortable in those. The other key thing, it's a principle, and it's also key to like growing a design team, is called show, don't tell. You know, actions and ideas spark conversation and speak way louder than words. Sometimes 3M was a great example of this for me too. You know, people have been with the company for so long. When you come on board and you're like, hey, I'm on this project, sometimes that doesn't get responded to right away. Those emails go unanswered. But if you can start to show that you're thinking, even if you're going in the wrong direction, people will just look at it and say, hey, I understand where you're going with this, but it's not really the right direction. Or, you know, maybe you don't have this piece of information, and it opens up the door to have a conversation. And it's really important. And at least, you know, you're not waiting for things to happen. You're at least taking an initiative to do things. I've got two more principles. So deliver valuable, well-crafted solutions. And that's just about putting in the work, right? Don't take shortcuts. Pay attention to the details. They matter. Create something that you're proud of, that your team is proud of, that your customer loves, so that it exceeds their expectations. And then always learn. Always validate solutions with customers. Everything always changes. The industry changes. The trends change. It's about continuing to understand who your users are, where your industry is going, and then identify and measure them, right? Quantitative and qualitative are equally important. We need to know what's happening, but we need to know why it's happening. And then just continually iterate, right? It's all about improving the experience. And as designers, we know that nothing's ever perfect and it's never done. So we have to keep learning and share that learning within the organization.
Great. I'm quite envious of your team. You are armed with such amazing principles. And now that we understand how it functions and what binds it together, you mentioned that sometimes you feel like you're at full capacity. So let's imagine a business situation when your stakeholders decided to increase the size of the team, hire two or four new people, let's say. What would be your process for that situation?
So I think that obviously there's a lot more work to be done. So what we do is we really prioritize based on the individual businesses. So each business kind of has its own priorities or work that we're accountable for, but we're also accountable for my team in general, not necessarily the UX team, but the larger team that we're part of, is accountable for every new product launch, every promotion, every campaign, the content for that. We launch a lot of promotions and vehicles, and we've been through a lot of different site migrations. So all of that is taking like precedent over a lot of, I would say, innovative things. But at the same time, you know, we want to understand the landscape, the ecosystem, who our customers are. And we don't necessarily have time, because we are in kind of like delivery mode or execution mode, to go back every now and then and say, hey, you know what, maybe we have a little extra time to do a heuristic evaluation and start to add things with the product owner to the backlog of what we should focus on. It really still is, because of the size of our team, just the largest priorities, which is a blend of, hey, we've got to migrate our site over to the new server. Or, hey, we've got to launch like four vehicles this week, or sometimes even more. Or, you know, we have our largest snowmobile selling exercise called Snow Check. It's an annual event where people can basically custom build their snowmobiles before they order them, which is really nice. You don't just get like the dealer selection. Mm-hmm. So these are all big like efforts that the team is constantly involved in. But at the same time, we're starting to see through user testing a lot of other things bubble up, like how do we help people find their right vehicle? And how do we speak to new users in terms that they understand? So that's when we have time to really go through like the full design process and an upfront discovery and really spend time like building new things that are beneficial to the business. So it is a blend of that. We can definitely take that and expand that. There's a whole nother side of the business that, because I have enterprise software background, that they want us to go into, and that is working on our dealer portal and doing, you know, seeing how dealer inventory works and what the dealer actually sees and what their promotions look like and how to handle service. And we have some apps for that. And, you know, like a lot of companies, these are successful pieces of the business that have always been done without designers. We know that design can add value to it, but again, they're very successful, and you have to make sure that design doesn't step in and try to like slow progress down, or we've got to go back and redo all of this or relearn some of this. So it's really about how do we inject ourselves to make the most value as efficiently as we can, but show that if you add more people, we can get X amount more done. There's definitely not a shortage of work. It's just figuring out how we scale that bandwidth to meet even more priorities.
So your awesome long answer put short is actually that adding the number of people isn't that easy. You need to prioritize where they're going to be working, what they're going to be working on, and how exactly.
Right, exactly. They still need to make an impact across the board. Just adding more people to a project that would have gotten done with less people isn't going to make really great business sense. Mm-hmm. You've got to make sure that every person you add is incrementally adding that value too.
That makes total sense and also proves that nothing is that easy in real life as just hiring people, right? However, where do you source your new talent? What is the process for that?
So, I mean, we have recruiters that handle a lot of that. Mm-hmm. I go to, you know, joining the AIGA, becoming a board member allows me access to a lot of networking events. I'm fortunate enough to make a lot of appearances, whether it be speaking at a conference or appearing on a podcast like this one, or judging an Adobe Creative Jam in New York in May that I have coming up. It's all about extending my network because we want to make sure that we're hiring the right people and filling in the gaps in talent that we don't currently have, so that our team is really, you know, running as smoothly as possible and making the most progress. It's just, again, it boils down to people, spending time with people, understanding them. You know, our hiring process is sometimes we staff for contractors first or temp to perm positions so that we can make sure it's a equally beneficial fit for us and the potential candidate. But also, you know, budget for the year has already been set. So it is technically easier sometimes to add a contractor than it is to add a full-time person with benefits because it hasn't been planned for. So as we go into next year, we'll try to push for more full-time people because I like the opportunity of having that knowledge stay with the company. But realistically, you know, it is really based on the needs that we have now and leveraging, you know, our internal network to find the right people.
When those people are on board, do you have someone holding their hand for a while? Do you have any specific onboarding documents or process for them?
I have a deck that I share that explains like our process. Mm-hmm. And then whatever product team they're working on has another way of onboarding them. So right now, the team that reports into me, the UX team that I'm the director of, all of their work is determined by the individual product owners on the teams that they're supporting. So it's kind of like being in a position of managing people and managing the overall quality of work and experience, but not managing the day-to-day work. So the designers are empowered there to work with the product owners and prioritize what they're going to work on each sprint and figure out how to measure that. And then at the same time, point out through what we learn, like really where a bigger impact can be made. So it's kind of like playing at two levels for me. But, you know, it's something that I really enjoy because I have a lot of influence on the product teams and on our business stakeholders. And my designers also have a lot of influence on more of the day-to-day things. But again, through design critiques and, you know, understanding process and one-on-ones, I spend a lot of time with new people to make sure that they're set up to success, set up to succeed here. Because, you know, it really could sometimes feel if you're not spending time with them that they just got thrown into the deep end of the pool. And that's a terrible feeling to have. And I've had that in previous points in my career, and some designers fight through that and swim through and make it out okay, and others are like, you know what, this isn't for me, and I leave. And I want to make sure that the people that are here are happy here and feel like they're doing their best work.
Do you have any system in place for existing team members to evaluate how happy they are, what progress they make, you know, on a regular basis?
For me, it's just a weekly one-on-one. It's really about understanding, you know, I take notes through the one-on-ones, not only of what they're working on, but what's in their way, what, you know, we're about to do like a 5-year plan workshop with my team. And it's not about 5 years at Polaris, it's where they see themselves in 5 years. And it might not be at Polaris, but it's up to me to prepare them to get to where they want to go. You know, there's the selfish and Polaris side of me that would love for them to stay, but it might not be in the cards for them. And to me, you know, I like to play that balance of what's best for Polaris, but what's best for my employees too, because, you know, I invest in them and want to see them succeed in whatever they do, and I will help them. So we have regular one-on-ones and just conversations. And even in those conversations, I ask them, like, what could I be doing better? And of course, until they get to know me and feel comfortable, they're like, no, everything is great. And then after a while, it's like, well, what am I doing that I could do differently? What am I doing that you like that I'm doing that I should continue doing? or what am I doing that you think I should stop doing? And just changing the way you ask questions and building relationships with people over time, it really opens up to be transparent and have honest communication. And I appreciate that. Even with teams I've had in the past, you know, sometimes people relocate, come across the country and realize they don't love the climate, but they're tied there because they'd have to pay the company back if they left early. And if we can establish that up front and they want to really like, hey, I know I'm leaving in 2 years. I don't want to live in Minnesota. Minus 30 degrees is the worst. I would love to like, you know, I want to go somewhere warm when I can. I'd say, hey, you know what? I appreciate you telling me that. Let's focus on giving you projects that are going to help build your portfolio. At the same time, it makes our team look good and builds up our team and attracts more talent to our team. And you know, I hate to see you leave. I'm going to try to convince you not to. But if I can't, like, the best of luck to you, because the talent that you have on your team is like your own portfolio. People aren't going to stay forever. There's always going to be timing or better opportunities that could present themselves. But just knowing that you've influenced them in some way and they've added to your team and become part of your portfolio, it's enough for me.
You've drifted to a very important topic, which is some people call it churn, talent churn, or people leaving your company. But I'm so happy with the positive attitude that you have towards people changing their career path.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because when I came to Polaris, they did have a decent amount of churn. Again, like, things were structured differently. So depending on billing models and projects and bandwidth and the way things would ramp up and ramp down, they would hire a lot of people to do specific projects, and then those projects would end, and then they'd let those people go because they didn't have a lot of work for them. But they were contractors, and it was a short-term contract, so it wasn't like out of the blue. But at the same time, it starts to damage the relationship externally in the community. So it's up to me to really like focus on our external relationship within the design community and making sure that when we hire people, they are people that are going to succeed, or when we bring them on board for a contract, that it's not just for a single project, it's actually for a product and the life cycle of that product. So it really is for me, like, how do we make sure that locally, especially locally, because most of our talent pool comes from the local area, how are we positioned locally in a way that people want to come here and work? And, you know, it really is about retention and avoiding that churn and making sure when you bring someone on that they're going to be the right fit. I mean, occasionally there's something that happens and it doesn't work out. But for the most part, we don't want to be seen as like a churn and burn shop. We want to really be a place people want to come and work.
When we talk about growth, it's not just numbers growth. It's also the growth of people who are in your area of responsibility. What do you do to make sure they keep getting their design education, keep leveling up?
So, yeah, I mean, growth is definitely more than just growing the team size. It's growing the team and their capabilities. Mm-hmm. It's also about just working on a different type of project, working on different complexities, different things that are essentially more complex than what they were working on yesterday or a month ago. So we do, you know, I do a lot of coaching and mentoring. I want people to go out and make mistakes so that they learn from them. So I will try to stop you from making a mistake if it's going to be a terrible mistake, but it's kind of more like coaching, right? It's understanding what a teachable or a coachable moment is and letting people go in a direction and pointing out, like, right there and then, hey, you know, if you would have done this a little bit differently, this could have been this outcome. Or what do you think the outcome would have been if you went ahead and did this instead? And it's playing that devil's advocate, but also putting them in a position that they can grow, letting them lead projects, letting them interface with the business more. Really just, you know, designers grow from doing. And, you know, I could provide coaching opportunities or conferences or online courses, and we can have share out sessions in our team meetings, and all of that is helpful, but you can only learn so much until you try to do it. And then that's when you understand, oh man, I committed to this. I have to figure out a way. I have to figure this out. And that's really when you learn, and you learn from those mistakes that you make along the way. And I'm here to make sure that people don't fail, but I also want them to stumble a little bit along the way so that they do learn.
I love that phrase, designers grow from doing that. It's so true. So for our listeners who want to take up design leadership roles and grow their teams, what would be your top two pieces of advice, some mistakes they should avoid or something they should necessarily do?
I would definitely talk to everybody that you can. It's hard to understand how to grow as a leader or how to make an impact without understanding where the team is today. And it's not about immediate growth. It's about taking the time to understand and observe. Just treat it like a design problem. Treat growing a team like any other design problem. You have to try things. Not everything is going to work out, and every situation is different. But as long as you're coming from the right place and you really want what's best for your team and for your company, then I think that everything will, through trial and error, like anything else, will find itself to be the way you want it at the end. Also, you know, people, talent, it's the greatest resource that we have, and people's time. And it's a lot more expensive to replace people than it is to keep them. But keeping talented people is hard. So make sure that you're investing in your team and understanding what their priorities are and understanding that those change and what they're interested in today, or, you know, their situation at home is today. It might change over time, which might shift some of their priorities, but understand that. Understand what motivates them. Spend the time with them to know them.
Fantastic advice. Are there any resources, maybe blogs or books that helped you, that shaped you as a leader and that our listeners could also read up on?
You know, I think Peter Merholz's Design for Design Orgs was a great book. You know, one of my favorite books, both books by Mike Montero, Design as a Job and You're My Favorite Client, really take a good look at understanding, you know, how to communicate better. And they're both a little taking a jab at designers, but empowering them at the same time so that we understand how people perceive us. I read a lot of blogs. The design community is so open to sharing. And if there's somebody that you want to talk to or need advice, like, reach out. Like, I can't explain how many people through LinkedIn I've just kind of come across and said, hey, I've got a question. Like, people that write books, people that speak at conferences, they take the time to answer a question and help guide you in any direction. Like, reach out to me if you have any questions. I'll do the best that I can to help. And if I can't, I'll recommend you to somebody else that could probably help you better than I can. It really is just about becoming part of the community and getting out of it. You know, put in more than you get out of it, of course. But really, like, just reach out to people. Have conversations. It's the best way to learn what you're going to do.
It is so true. And everybody keeps being so shy, but indeed, internet is such an open space.
Yeah, sure is.
Thank you for sharing your wisdom today, Andy. It was amazing. And where can people find you and your amazing work online?
Yeah, so most of the work that I've done is stuff that I can't share publicly because it was in healthcare, and some of it, you know, is behind like walls and PHI. But, you know, I'm on Twitter, I'm on social at Andy Vitale everywhere. Just reach out, say hello. Like, that's it. I'm on Twitter all the time.
Great. Well, thanks again for your time. And I hope our listeners take away those leadership lessons from you.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on. It's been fun, Jane.
Thank you. Have a great day.
If you enjoyed listening to this episode, please leave a review on iTunes. It will help other people discover this podcast.